Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you with us today as we talk about growing fruit. And we have three guests for you today. I'm really pleased to be able to welcome them all back. Christelle Godot is an associate professor and fruit crops entomologist and extension specialist in the Department of Entomology. Christelle, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Larry. Happy to be here.
With us as well, Amaya Atucha, who is an associate professor and fruit crop specialist, holder of the Gottschalk Endowed Chair for Cranberry Research in the Department of Horticulture. She works with cranberries, but she knows a lot about apples and a whole bunch of other fruits, too. So, Amaya, welcome back.
Thank you, Larry. Great to be here.
And great to welcome back Leslie Holland. Leslie is an assistant professor and extension specialist in fruit crop pathology. She's kind of the Dr. Death, we might call her, in the Department of Plant Pathology. And Leslie, it's good to see you again as well.
It's great to be back. Good to see you.
So they're all located on the UW-Madison campus. And as we visit with them, I hope you'll join in. What fruit questions do you have? You can do it a couple of different ways. You can call us. That'd be great. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Or you can email us, email address ideas@wpr.org. Ideas@wpr.org. Maya, let's start with you. What advice do you have for gardeners who'd like to add some fruit to their gardens? And we got a pretty broad range of things we could add.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the first advice is make sure that you are choosing the right fruit crop for your location. I get all these questions all the time. Can I grow peaches? Can I grow cherries? Yes, you can grow them in your backyard if you just want to have beautiful wood. But you're not going to get any fruit, that's for sure. So making sure that you are choosing the right fruit crop that is cold-hardy enough for Wisconsin is really important. So that's the number one thing. The second thing is choose the right spot. Just give it the highest chance for that tree, that bush, whatever you planted to survive. So make sure that you prepare the site well and that you have enough sunlight, which is, you know, the number one limitation. So those two are basically the key. And then make sure that you buy high quality plants. So buy it from a good nursery. That also will give it a bigger chance of success.
That's all good advice. Although I'll probably get 10 calls from people saying, I have a peach tree and I get all kinds of good peaches.
Yeah, well, lucky you. You have it in the right spot. But yeah, we do get a lot of those questions. And I have tried to grow peaches in my house. And with all I know, I haven't been successful.
Well, so what's the easiest? Berries, the easiest, I suppose.
Absolutely. Berries. Strawberries are pretty good because they grow so close to the ground that you can cover them during the winter. But things like raspberries grow really well. Apple trees are always very successful. We can grow really good apples. Pear trees are also a good option. And some of the plum trees, some of the hybrid plum trees, those also work really well.
Well, Christelle and Leslie, is get you involved here. What should they consider, homeowners consider when it comes to insects and disease? Maybe start with you, Christelle.
Great. That's a very good question. I think the most important is to try to learn about the insects that you might encounter when you have, you grow a specific crop. It's really hard to wait and have a bunch of damage and then identify what could have caused that. So being informed and scouting, looking, paying attention to your fruit to see what damage you see or what signs of something coming or insects that you actually see on there, such as like a Japanese beetle or something like that. But it's very important to know what you're dealing with, because once you start thinking about managing them, if you don't know what they are, you're going to be left with chemical control. And I know most people don't want to apply chemical control. And the only way to do that is going to be to be aware of what's out there and what are the strategies for those specific pests.
Yeah, good points. Leslie, what about you?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I think going back to what Amaya said about planting location, that's going to be critical. You don't want to plant in an area where there's maybe too much shade or too much sun. That's going to really interfere with your cropping system. Additionally, if you have an area in your yard that retains a lot of water, you don't want to have wet feet for your plant either. So I would keep that in mind from a disease perspective. Additionally, if you have things like juniper or different cedars in your yard, if you're going to have apples, be mindful that you will likely have cedar apple rust or another type of rust on your apple tree, which usually is just an aesthetic issue when you're a homeowner. But if it's not your aesthetic, then I would just be careful and consider removing some of those alternate hosts.
Yeah. Let's say I've got a small space in my backyard. What are there some fruit tree varieties that work in a small space? Well, or how big a space do I need, I guess, if I want to put an apple tree in or another tree? Or
well,
not tree.
Apple trees would probably be, you know, the best because we have the dwarfing rootstocks that can control the vigor of the tree, and so you can keep them relatively small. And another thing that you have to do if you want to control the size of those trees is really making sure that you're cropping them every year. There's nothing better than fruit to really control a vigor of the tree. But if you have a relatively small space, I would recommend go more with something like berries. You know, you can do something like gooseberries or like currants or even a patch of raspberries would work well. You can also have some grapes. Maybe you can have one vine of a grape that you have a little trellis for it. You can have like a seedless table grape that you harvest somewhere in, you know, the beginning of September. That could be another good alternative for a small space.
And some questions coming up here. You can join in, by the way, the number to call 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address ideas@wpr.org. Looks like Mike in Coon Valley and Tom in Reway are coming up soon with some questions relating to fruits for sure. Are there some fruits that are just becoming more popular to grow that, I mean, we've always, in this state, strawberries have always been maybe the most popular fruit? Or, no, apples probably.
When it comes to homeowners, I would say probably apples.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything that's kind of coming to the fore, a new type of fruit, for example, that you haven't worked with too much in the past, but now in the last few years seems to be coming more popular?
One new one that I've heard about, and I actually planted a couple of bushes in my house, is honeyberries. Honeyberries is one that is becoming really popular because there's some new cultivars that are coming up from a breeding program in Canada. So that's another one that we have had some questions. We did have a really nice webinar during the spring on alternative berry crops, and we had a grower from Minnesota that very nicely offered to give a lecture on all his experience growing honeyberries. And it was great. And so if people are interested in learning more about honeyberries, they can go to our website, and we have their links to the webinar. We also have a YouTube channel where you can find all of those videos and learn about honeyberries. There's also other webinars there on small fruits that could be applicable for homeowners, such as, you know, currants and gooseberries. Those would also be great.
And the honeyberry, is it like, what's it like? Do you remember?
Kind of like think about maybe like a thinner berry from a table grape. So longer, a little bit longer, almost like the, you know, like a finger, like the tip of a finger. It's blue, really intense blue, like a blueberry. And it tastes something between a blueberry and a raspberry. Oh. They're very cold hardy. And the fruit is, it's ready to be picked really early on. So by this time, you have already picked fruit. So it blooms and it produces fruit in a very short period of time. So it's great. It's probably one of the first fruits that is ready during the season. So that's great, even before the strawberries.
Blueberries coming up here. Mike in Coon Valley. Can we get Mike in Coon Valley up?
Good morning.
Morning, Mike. Thanks for calling.
You bet. We've got six blueberry plants in our backyard, and I know our area isn't the best for growing blueberries, but we do periodically alter the soil with some acid. We've had them in for at least 10 years. 3 years ago, the bushes were absolutely loaded with berries. We've always had berries in the previous years, but then last year we had zero berries. This year, maybe a dozen berries a bush at tops. Is this a pruning issue, or is it a spring issue when and weather with the blossoms.
So I get these questions a lot about, like, not having fruit. And the first question I've always asked is, were there any flowers? Because that's the key to try to answer this question. So if there were no flowers, it means that there was some problem that happened the previous season with flower formation. Or there was extreme cold damage during the winter that killed all of those flowers that were inside those buds compressed during the winter. And so that could be one issue. However, if there were flowers but there was no fruit that set, there could be other issues such as spring frost that was just mentioned, in which you have damage to the flower so you don't set a fruit. In this case, it sounds to me that when that those bushes had a really high yield, that also impacts the amount of fruit you're going to have the following year. So that's what we call the biennial bearing. So a year of a lot of fruit, a year of very small crop, and it goes alternated one year and another. And so the way to control that is to do some good pruning. So you can reduce the amount of flowers on one year so that you balance them and you make sure the following year you will have flowers by doing pruning. So in this case, it seems to me like the bushes might be a little bit debilitated. And so doing some good pruning and making sure that you have nice growth, you want to have at least about, something between maybe 10 inches of growth in your new shoots, that will ensure that those are going to have some flowers. You also want to stop fertilizing about now. A lot of people continue fertilizing, and that increases the vegetative growth, and that reduces the number of flowers for the following year. So those are the things that I would pay attention. First of all, make sure that you figure out if the fact that you don't have fruit is because you don't have flowers, or because those flowers are not setting fruit. And then pruning is encouraged, especially in blueberries. If those blueberry bushes are 10 years old, they need to be pruned so that you renew the material.
And when you prune them, do you like you're cutting, doing a haircut? Or?
No, absolutely not. That is always the first thing that people do is say, I'm going to do a little cut here. I'm going to do a little cut here. What is going to harm a little cut here, a little cut there? Well, it actually really disturbs a lot of the formation of the flowers, and especially the amount of light that those bushes are getting. And this is not only true for blueberry bushes, but also for fruit trees. It's better to do one or two big cuts in which you remove, let's say, a branch that is right in the middle that is shading a lot, than doing a lot of small little cuts everywhere in the bush. So just look at the bush, see which are probably the older of those
canes.
Cut
the oldest ones out.
And remove it and make one or two, and that's it. The more you cut, then the more you're also going to invigorate more growth for the following year. So you need to make sure that you're keeping a balance. Removing one or two canes is probably the best thing. And the same is true for fruit trees. Removing maybe one or two big branches that they're blocking light, that would also help.
And Leslie, I imagine too, if you don't do that, then you've got things are kind of clustered together. If you get rain in there, there's room for pathogens to get involved.
Absolutely. It just makes it more conducive environments for things to fester inside of that plant. So.
Yeah. We have any insects that really go after blueberries?
Oh, yes, we do. There's always insects. I mean, that's what insects do. They're everywhere, and there's always insects that will love to eat your yummy fruits. So going back to the point that Amaya made of kind of pruning and opening up that canopy so you have more light, that will be something that's also been shown to work on spotted winged Drosophila, which is actually one of the number one key pests now of blueberry. So that's this little fly that flies around, kind of your kitchen by your rotting fruit or, good smelling fruit. That's a different one, of course. This one is the new one that's from Asia. And so what happens with this is they also like this humid environment, shady environment. And opening up the canopy, allowing more airflow and more light in there, also decreases the number of eggs that are laid in those fruits. So that would help.
Very good question. Thank you so much for calling. Taking a look at growing your own fruit on your property today with our three guests, Amaya Atucha, one of our guests today, Leslie Holland, and Christelle Godeau, all from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and they're all experts in fruits. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Tyler Ditter, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. Three great guests for you today. Leslie Holland, Christelle Godot, and Amaya Atucha, all fruit experts from UW-Madison. Our lines are all filled, and we have some emails as well. Let's go to Tim in Madison next. Tim, thanks for calling.
Hi. I'm curious about Tom and Sweet apple trees. I used to get Tom and Sweets when I was a kid. My parents used to go out by the Mississippi, but I have not seen any around for years. I'm wondering if it's possible to even buy any of these trees anymore.
Tall and Sweet. I don't know that. I wonder if that's a common name. That's something we can kind of do a little research on.
I've never heard of that variety. Can you tell me a little bit more about it?
It's a small, green, extremely sweet apple. My mother said it was an old Scandinavian tree.
It might just be that you could do some research about it to try to find some nursery that might have some of these heirloom varieties, but it's not something that we grow commercially, and that I'm not familiar at all. And it seems like these cultivars are planted like wild. Is that right?
No, these would be from orchards. We used to go out to the orchards out there and the cheese mills and get our cheese and all that stuff. So it was a place we went. I remember they were $5 for a bag of them, but you know, I can't find them anymore.
Yeah, I think one place you might look at is to Decorah, Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Seed Savers.
The Seed Savers Exchange in Decorah, Iowa may have some more information. I bet you if you went online to the Seed Savers Exchange and plopped that name in there, you'd get some information. You may well get some information from them.
Yeah. What happens with these kind of old varieties is that, you know, commercial orchards, they just don't grow them anymore. There's not like well-established market. They're very niche. So they just remove a lot of them. But there are definitely, if you look at seedsavers.org and you look for that particular cultivar, you might be able to find some information. You might be able to get some scion wood that you could graft it if you want to have your own tree of that cultivar. So that would be, you know, the best shot to be able to get those apple bags. Just, you know, maybe this is your chance of planting one of them in your backyard and grafting it yourself.
Yeah, why not? Tim, good luck with that. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Mohammed called to say he has apricot trees. They're about 10 years old now, and he gets fruit, but it's pretty tiny. What can he do to increase the size? Amaya?
First of all, kudos for getting apricots in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. That is already an achievement. I would say that probably the issue, and going back to the previous answer about the blueberries, is the same thing. If you have too many fruits in one branch, that branch doesn't really have the capacity to grow all of those fruit to have a big size by the end of the season. So what you need to do, unfortunately, is that you need to do some thinning. So you will have to remove some of those fruits really early on. The earlier you remove them, the highest chance you give to the ones that are left to become bigger fruit. So you want to leave maybe one apricot, you know, every other something between like 3 to 5 inches, so you don't have them all in one branch, and you don't want to have more than maybe 3 to 4 apricots per branch. That will really help them grow. But again, you're only going to get that benefit if you do it early on when the fruits are small. If you let them grow, well, the tree has already invested a lot of resources in those fruits that you're going to drop, and they're already going to be small. So make sure that you do the thinning early on.
There you go. That was a great question as well. Let's go to Craig and Stevens Point next. Hi, Craig. Oh, I guess not. Let's see. We got him up now. Here we go. Craig and Stevens Point, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Absolutely. Hi, good morning, and thanks for taking my call. Two quick part question. I have a couple peach trees that are 3 years old. In year two, they produced about a dozen peaches each, and they were spectacular. This year, year three, nothing. And as I heard the guest say before, there were no flowers on it, if that helps. So will peaches be biannual sometimes? And my second question is, I know peaches are susceptible to dying, understandably, in the winter of Wisconsin. So is there anything I can do to help protect my peach trees during the winter here in Wisconsin.
And you're in Stevens Point, those peach trees.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty good.
So I don't think, I mean, definitely the biennial condition happens to all fruit crops. But in the case of peaches, in your case particular, I don't think that you have a biennial problem because, you know, a dozen peaches in a tree, even though it's like a two-year-old tree, it should be fine. You would have still have had some flowers. The fact that you didn't have any flowers, I think it's more to do with cold damage and specifically because you are in Stevens Point, it gets really cold there, and young peach trees are going to be more sensitive to cold damage than maybe more well-established trees. What can you do to protect them? Unfortunately, there's not much. A lot of that has to do with the initial thought of where to locate those trees. So, you know, putting them maybe next to the house where they're protected from the wind can help that. And also, you know, figure out whether you're going to put them on the northern facing part of your property or the southern part of your property would also affect. If you put them facing the southern slope, what is going to happen is that that side is going to get warmer during the spring, and so they're going to break bud and flower earlier in the spring, so there's more chances that you will have spring frost and not get any fruit. On the other hand, if you put them on the northern one, they're going to stay cold or cooler for a longer period of time in the spring, and they will probably bud break maybe sometimes even a week later than if you would have them on the southern slope, and that could help escape some of the frost during the spring. But there's nothing really, we don't have any products that you can apply, none of the, you know, you can get some really expensive geotextiles, but I don't recommend any of that. They really don't make such a huge difference. It's all about making sure that you're putting it in the right spot in your house.
Oh, very good. Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it. Whitney in Richland Center emailed to ask if you have any recommendations for white pine blister rust. Red currants might be able to be immune to it. Or is that not a good idea at all if there are white pines present, to Leslie?
It's a good question. I get this one a lot. So I think the best answer in terms of white pine blister rust is going to be genetic resistance. Fortunately, we've come a long way, and we actually have both white pine and currant varieties that are resistant to this disease. So I would recommend that you go for a red or white currant variety that is resistant. There's probably about four or five main varieties available. And then when it comes to black currants, you're going to find even more options for different resistant varieties. So I would probably lean more towards a black currant variety, as those tend to be more available for resistance. However, there's probably a couple others. In terms of planting them, they're going to have to be resistant varieties if you have them near one another. And I don't mean just if it's one is in your back, or both are in your backyard. Even if it's down the street, you're still going to want to have resistant varieties available.
Yeah, and so how do you find those? I mean, what do you look for? Where do you figure out if something is resistant?
Certainly. Well, there's a couple of resources online. The one I've looked at the most is actually the University of Minnesota has a really great website that pushes forward some resistant varieties. We do have some resources for UW-Madison, but more recently bred varieties are available at the University of Minnesota.
Yeah, Amaya?
One that I know that is a red currant that is resistant is Red Lake.
That's Red Lake.
Mm-hmm. And Viking as well, I believe, is another red currant.
All right. There we go. JC in Wautoma, it's your turn. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Yes. Thank you for this program. I planted a lingonberry shrub or bush. It was very small this year, and it's just not taking off. It hasn't died, but it's just not showing much growth at all. Any suggestions?
Yeah, probably it's just the stress from planting. Suggestions would be make sure that you're watering it consistently, because they have very small root system when you first transplant it. So making sure that those roots stay moist is really important. You can put some, you know, sort of mulch around it. That really helps. Something that really helps with planting new you know, in general, just like bushes or fruit crops, is to make sure that you're doing a good job of preparing the soil. So incorporating maybe some compost in there will help also retain some of that moisture that stresses them. I don't know if you checked anything about the pH. They also like acidic pH. So that is something that could also be affecting them, and it would be expressed on some chlorosis on the leaves. But yeah, the first year is definitely a year that you might not see a lot of growth if the site was not well prepared. Though if it managed to survive the winter, I'm pretty sure that it's going to start growing pretty strongly the following year. Most of the energy is being put right now into developing new roots and try to get established in that new place. So you might not see a lot of leaves, but there's still a lot of root growth happening, which is the most important thing for next year, to get those lingonberry bushes going.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. I want to go back to the question about the apple variety, because we just got an email. It sounded to us, and I think the caller did say tall and sweet, but our emailer says she thinks what he was really referring to was Tolman sweet, T-O-L-M-A-N, sweet variety. And he may have, you know, that may be very well be what he was referring. He always heard his mother say tall and sweet, and it was probably Tolman sweet that he...
Interesting.
Be a great name.
Yeah, I like the name Tall and Sweet. It's great, but Tolman sweet could be the actual variety.
Yeah, it kind of, I'm just looking up on the internet, and it might be that. I mean, the picture shows those small green apples that he was referred. So it's T-O-L-M-A-N, Tolman sweet. That's what they should look for in nursery. So just Google that cultivar of apple and put nursery, and I'm sure that some nurseries that have heirloom varieties will come up.
Oh, for sure. Well, isn't it great? You know, we have so many smart, good-looking listeners to this show.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That do a great job. If we don't have answers, somebody out there will have one for us. I love that. Tolman sweet. Jim and Mequon, we'll go to you now. Hi, Jim.
Thank you. Great show, as always. My grapes... They develop a black spot and eventually a larvae. Like in September, you'll see the bug in the bottom of them. And the bunches, they never get a whole bunch of grapes on a bunch, maybe a dozen, where there could be as many as, you know, 20, maybe even 30 grapes. And then I have a question about a mulberry tree that doesn't produce.
Okay, well, let's see. Who wants to start? Christelle, maybe?
Sure. So the larva, but you also mentioned that the fruit was black. And I would suspect that what you have is a combination of pathogens with a larva that somehow made it out of that cluster. So I would suspect that, yeah, you have a combination of both. On the larva, it's a little hard to tell without a little bit more detail. And I think if it was later in the season and it was already compromised by a pathogen, then you can have a lot of different insects that will lay eggs inside there. You could have, like I mentioned, the Drosophila, whether it's sputtering Drosophila or the regular Drosophila that are out there. Or you could have other kind, like, say, caterpillars or something like that. For the most part in grape, though, we don't really have at harvest larvae that are in the fruit. So I would suspect that's a random one. I suspect you didn't see a lot of those larvae coming out of the fruit. But your main problem is probably what Leslie can address, which would be pathogens that cause the fruit to turn black.
Yeah, Leslie?
Yep, it sounds like black rot to me, which is pretty common in Wisconsin vineyards. And so that's a fungal pathogen that actually infects during, I would say, even before bloom happens. So it's an early season infection, but we don't often see those symptoms until later in the season once those fruits start to develop. So in terms of management, what you can do is oftentimes those small black fruits will just stay kind of stick tight almost in the canopy. You want to clear those out of your canopy and remove them, usually during your dormant pruning time. You also might see the disease manifest as black rot spots on the grape leaves, and those can also spread the disease if the fungus is present inside those kind of tannish brown lesions. So it's really going to come down to sanitation of your grapes during that dormant pruning period.
And, you know, it's probably a good time to talk about the Wisconsin Fruit website, because I was taking a look at the website, and there was some things relating to grapes, and one was Phomopsis, I believe. Is that right?
Yep, that's correct. Phomopsis is another one we've actually been seeing quite a bit this season, and I think that has to do with some of the rain we've received more recently. So Phomopsis, similar to black rot, is something that overwinters in the vine and should be pruned out during that winter pruning period. It's quite distinct in that it almost makes the cane look very bleached with black speckles on it. So you want to remove those canes. Otherwise, if not, when we get those heavy early season rains, the spores will eject from those fruiting bodies and then they'll land all over your leaves. You see yellow specks with the black center. And then unfortunately, if those infections aren't able to be controlled, that pathogen can actually kind of be inactive inside of the fruits. And then when fruits start to ripen up, you can start to see a rot of the actual fruits. So,
And there's a great, well, I always thought it was a great publication. It's called Growing Grapes in Wisconsin, that I liked a lot, primarily because of the way the great descriptions of pruning grape vines and so forth. And I'd recommend, I don't know, are you still recommending that publication?
Sure.
When it
sure.
comes to pruning, yeah, there's some good illustrations. A lot of the cultivars that they're there are cultivars that we just don't grow anymore. We have so many more like new ones, much better adapted to Wisconsin than when that publication was issued. But in terms of pruning and training, you know, those things have
really
not changed
good.
That much. And so that's a really good reference. We do have a lot of other resources in the website as well when it comes to pruning.
So that website, by the way, we have a link to that website on today's program date. So if you go to ideas at WPR.org/Larry, and then go to today's program date, which should be right there, and then look under program notes and you'll find a link. It's not that bad of a link, is it, Amaya?
Another way of doing it, really easy, just Google Wisconsin fruit and you put UW. You'll land on our website, I'm sure.
All right. That's the easy way to do it. Jim, thanks. You had another question about mulberry.
Yeah, thank you, Larry. I have a mulberry tree. It's nestled between a pine and a crab apple, and the fruit never develops. They're like a white kind of faux-looking fruit, and then before they even turn into anything that would resemble the berry, they all fall off.
Anybody have an idea?
Mulberries, you can have what we call plants that only produce male flowers and plants that only produce female flowers. So you can have a tree that will never give you any fruit because the flowers that that tree produces, they only have pollen. It's a pollen source. And then you can have others that are only producing female. So if you don't get the pollen, for pollination, you won't get any fruit. So that could be one of the issues. There are many of them that are perfect flowers that have both sex within one flower, and we can see those everywhere, and that will produce fruit from a single tree. So that would be one of the things to investigate about specifically the tree that you have, whether it's a tree that has perfect flowers or is one that is just producing female or male flowers. And in that case, they won't give you fruit unless you have both of them.
How do you figure that out?
You just have to look at you need to figure out where you got it from, first of all.
Yeah.
So if you have any information about where you got the tree from, it was a nursery, or if you just, found it there, it's planted there, that might be one of the reasons why. Even though you have the flower, the fruit, the berry doesn't develop because there's no
nothing
pollination
there
happen.
Yeah.
The other thing that could happen, if you said that it's between two trees, it might be that it's very shaded, and that could be another thing that is affecting the development of the berries. Not enough light. That definitely happens to all fruit crops. If it's completely shaded by those other two trees, that would be the reason also. So
there you go, Jim. Lots of things to think about there. Roger in Grantsburg, your turn. Hi, Roger.
Hi, Larry. How are you doing today?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I've been trying to plant apple trees here forever, and they get, I bought some set, the seedlings and stuff at the nursery, put them in, and I'm trying to find out, I'm in real heavy clay ground to start with. And is there any way, like the tree spikes or anything, to fertilize these trees? They get so big and they don't seem to ever get any bigger. They'll grow a little bit and grow some branches, but they never seem to get any size to them. And then I found out that I had ants, a massive infestation of ants. And they were at the base of the tree, and one of them that killed that, that one was actually the really good tree. And, of course, that had to get, that they killed that. But the other ones, they just don't seem to go. They don't seem to go anywhere.
Are they, do you know what variety they are?
They were Honeycrisps.
Did you have just Honeycrisp, or you had another variety?
Well, there was a couple of different varieties. There was a Honeycrisp, and then there was another, I can't remember the name of it. It was a different variety than the Honeycrisp was.
So if I get this correct, you plant the tree starts growing vigorously, and then after the first year, they stop growing. Is that correct?
Yeah, they just stop. They get leaves on them in water burn, and they just stop.
How tall do they get?
You fertilize them or put tree spikes or...
I think that your problem, as you pointed out, is your soil. I think that you get those trees established a little bit, and then as soon as they try to continue expanding their root system, either the soil is too heavy, or maybe when you're digging that hole to plant them, maybe you're sealing the sides of that hole, and the roots cannot penetrate if you have a soil that has a lot of clay. So what I will recommend you is the next time you buy a tree and you want to establish, work out that area where you're going to plant them. Just really remove as much soil as possible, mix it with compost, and make it fluffy, make it more that there's more air in there, and then establish your tree. The other thing that you can do is put mulch, a wood chip mulch, over the tree. That would also help break down over time the organic matter and keep the very superficial roots well moist, but then not saturated. I think that could be probably what's happening. You get the initial growth and the vigor that is coming from those trees from the nursery, but once those trees really have to expand their root system, maybe that soil is just too heavy for them to expand, and then they're just basically sitting there. They're not dead, but they're just sitting and then really not growing mm-hmm. anymore. So make sure you do a good soil preparation. Don't put any fertilizer in the planting hole. That is going to burn the roots. Just make sure you put some good quality compost. That would be my best recommendation. And once you get those trees going the first season, then the second season, you might consider putting some fertilizer if you need to. But the answer here is not just fertilizer. It's a good soil preparation before you plant them.
And the mulch, you need to be a little careful on the mulch.
What happens with the mulch, if you're using wood chip mulch, is that it's going to retain a little bit of the nitrogen at the very beginning. But that only happens during maybe the first year. Then once it starts breaking down, it's actually going to start releasing some nitrogen.
Yeah, but you don't want it too thick, do you? And not right up to the branch.
You don't want to just cover all the way up to the crown of the tree, because, again, that's going to keep the crown of the tree really moist. But you want to have just around maybe, you know, a ratio of like a foot around the base of the tree. That will really help. And just making sure that you're not covering the crown of the tree.
There you go, Roger. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Taking a look at fruit, and you have some ideas about some fruits that you want to plant in your garden, or maybe you already have and you're having some problems with them, fruit trees or other fruits like strawberries. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with three guests for you: Leslie Howland, Christelle Godot, and Amaya Atusha. They're all fruit experts from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. It's great to have them with us today. And we have lots of questions online. The number to call is 800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email, the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Let's take some calls. Bill in Wisconsin Rapids, what's on your mind?
Okay, I have a Meyer lemon tree. And last year I got 7 lemons on it, and I just got the tree last year. And this year, it's pretty thick with leaves and branches. And I'm getting flowers, but I'm not getting any fruit.
Hmm. So do you fertilize? your trees? I'm sorry?
Every 7 to 10 days.
Well, maybe that's your problem. You're fertilizing it too much.
No, they're pretty heavy feeders.
But the more you fertilizer, the more leaves you're going to start getting. And that, again, is going to sort of like tip the balance into going into more like vegetative and putting all that nitrogen that you're probably putting in there into producing new leaves and new shoot and not necessarily flowers. So that might be one problem. The other thing is where you have it located. It seems like a lot of the flowers that you got last year and the fruit that you got last year was coming from whatever conditions those trees were in the nursery. So maybe those trees in the nursery had a lot more light, which is it's a key factor to be able to produce fruit. And so that's something to consider, where the location. If you have it indoors, I would assume during the winter, and a lot of the flower induction process will happen during that time, to make sure that it's receiving enough light. So that could also help produce more flowers.
Yeah, I fertilize every week, but I use a fish emulsion. Has a very low nitrogen content to it, and so that's why I can get away with that. Every time you water, you just put that fish emulsion, and I get lots of limes anyway. I don't have a lemon tree, but could get lots of limes for sure. So those are some things to consider, and I assume you have it outside, Bill, now.
Yeah, outside. It's facing south.
Well, that's where it should be.
But in the wintertime, it's in front of the patio. It doesn't get a lot of sun, but I have a grow light over it.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'm too much light.
No.
My recommendation would be just cut down on the nitrogen fertilizer a little bit and see how the response to that.
Yeah, you might try that fish emulsion. It's lower nitrogen, and on a regular basis, it works pretty well. I know some others who have done it. Taken my advice on that with their lemon trees and had good success. So, something to think about, Bill. Thank you. Ruth in Chippewa Falls, your turn. Hi, Ruth.
Hi. I'm calling in regard to the man who had the mulberry tree with the white berries that fell off.
Yeah, when they're ripe, yeah.
Well, they're ripe.
Well, the reason they're falling off is because they're ripe. But the reason they're white is, Christelle, you were talking about this earlier.
Oh, I was just thinking that probably what Amaya mentioned is that if it's too shaded, then you might not be able to get your fruit to fully ripen. So that's a possibility, and Amaya brought that up. So that would have been my guess, but what our caller is saying is that they're ripe. You think they're ready to be eaten?
Is that what you?
My son had one and wide open, and all of a sudden it wanted, and it was white.
So it was a variety that had white berries, huh?
Oh, yeah. Very, very cool.
Never heard of that.
That's a possibility.
Yeah, it's obviously it is a possibility if there's a variety out there, and it looks like Amaya and Leslie are in agreement on that. So you just go ahead and try one, huh?
Yeah, that's what I would do.
Thanks, Ruth. It's good to have that information that we know that there's some varieties out there that are, in fact, white. Thank you. Appreciate it. Ron in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Ron.
Yes, I have a question. Mulberry tree, I've got an overabundance of berries. You know, they start middle of June, and for 3 weeks after that, I got berries landing on the ground, so I put some permeable sheet mulch on and let the water soak through when it rains. But I somewhat was belated, and, of course, there was puddles, because originally I had tarps down. The water didn't flow through those, and I had puddles, and the flies are landing on these piles of berries. I'm just wondering, could I trim that mulberry tree so there isn't so much fruit? Could I do that in the spring, or should I wait in the fall?
Yeah, you can definitely do that. If you do it in the spring to remove the flowers, that will be fine. You can definitely prune them and remove as many flowers as possible. That will reduce the amount of fruits that you're going to have. I think that would probably be the best way. If you just want to prune to take out some of potential fruit, would be to do it in the spring. You can also do it in the fall. That will remove some of the buds that will be flowers in the spring. So either one of them is fine, and they're not going to affect the tree at all.
Yeah, there you go, Ron. Thank you. Dan in Edgerton, we'll go to you next. Hi, Dan.
Yes, hi. You can always tell it's mulberry season by the color of the scats on your car's windshield. But I am pleased to hear there are so many apple questions. And I was talking, or I was listening about the Tolman sweet. The Tolman sweet was a very common variation of the name. It was used all over the place. But Tolman sweet was probably the most popular sweet apple in Wisconsin up until about 1940.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's been around. It's an old Massachusetts variety since the late 1600s. And it was very popular in Wisconsin and the upper Midwest.
Probably because it was really hardy.
Very hardy, and it just was always a reliable sweet apple. And that's what a lot of people really liked. And it's a real pleasure to hear Amaya. I met you some years ago. This is Dan Bussey.
Hi, Dan. Of course, you're, I was going to say, what an expert. But yes, you are the expert.
Well, I didn't mean to bring that up, but thanks. This is always a fun. Anyways, the Tolman sweet is widely available. You can find it in a lot of places. I think I have it in my collection that's happening. And I think the Seed Savers had a tree. I'm not sure if it's still there, but they may know of it. But it's not a hard one to find.
All right. Dan, thank you so much. Appreciate that call. Well, we're learning more than we ever thought we were going to learn about Tolman.
Yes, and Dan is really the expert. He has this collection of books of heirloom varieties of apples that we have them here at the library at UW-Madison. It's a compendium of, it's just a wealth of knowledge, beautiful, full of old cultivars of apples. So it's it's a great surprise that he called, but yeah, he's really the expert when it comes to heirloom varieties.
Oh, and Dan, thanks again. Appreciate it very much. Let's turn our attention to Scott in Waukesha. Hi, Scott.
Yes, hi. I've got a raspberry patch. It's an established patch and mostly black raspberries. And I was wondering what to do to keep the weeds out of underneath, between the violets, the ground ivy, the dandelions, and the grass. It sometimes is hard to find the berries. So what's a good, should we just mulch the heck out of it or spray or what? Right.
Are you producing fall berries?
No, we're picking black raspberries right now.
Right now, yeah. The only thing that I would recommend is probably just to go ahead and do some mulching. There's absolutely nothing else that you can do. You can try, I don't know how you have your patch established, but depending on how wide your rows are, you might want to put maybe some mulch on the sides. So you just establish a width of canes that you want on production, and then on the side of it, you can put some plastic mulch and just try to keep it in place with some, compostable, what are they called? Sod staples. That could help, and you keep it in place on the side, and then right in the middle, as the canes are emerging in the spring, just try to do some of the weeding there, and then the canes will surpass the weeds. But yeah, there's really not much. It's really hard to control the weeds there. I would say that most of the work has to be done as soon as you get those canes that are the new canes are coming from the ground. That's when you have your best chance of trying to take as many weeds as possible.
Let's talk a bit more about raspberry plants. Christelle, what do we got for challenges for the raspberry grower when it comes to insects?
Well, there's quite a few insects that you'll see in raspberries, and most of them are not really going to cause major problems. You might have raspberry cane borers or things like that. They'll be there. They might take a cane out or something like that, but nothing that people in general have to worry about. The main one that we worry about for raspberries, and that's the same for other of those small fruit crops, will be spotted-winged Drosophila. So I mentioned it a little bit earlier, but that's this tiny little fly that doesn't look like much, but it's able to cut the skin of the fruit and lay its eggs inside. And that will attack the fruit as it's ripening and ripe, like the fruit we pick. And so that's a major problem. And going back to what Amaya just mentioned, research that we've done in our labs with Amaya is looking at those plastic mulches. Not only do they help with the weeding, but they also help with that little fly. So that would be something I would consider. And opening up the canopy of your plants is also going to provide more light, more airflow, and decrease the humidity. And all of that works very well with those plastic mulches. You could also consider the fabric mulch, the garden mulch that people put in. And that would also help with that as well a little bit. So
yeah, there we go. Mm-hmm. Leslie, what about on the disease side?
Yep, I think for raspberries, a big thing we see are viruses. Raspberries get a lot of different viruses. So I would say, and, you know, really relevant to talk about weed control, because sometimes those weeds can actually harbor the viruses themselves. Mm-hmm. And so if you have an aphid or other insect vector, or even a nematode vector, if those are then feeding on those weed species, they can then transfer that over to the raspberry. So weed control is going to be really critical when it comes to disease control for viruses.
So there we go. That's it's raspberry. I love raspberries, darn it. I've got some raspberries sitting. I didn't grow them myself, but I did purchase them, I will say that. And they're sitting in my refrigerator right now, ready for me to eat. What about you? Do you like raspberries? Hey, I like our guests, that's for sure. Our guests today, Leslie Holland, Christelle Godot, and Amaya Atucha. They are all fruit experts from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and always a pleasure to have them with us here. I'm Larry Mailer for the Ideas Network and Garden Talk.